The following program is rated U for universal audiences and is considered suitable for listeners of all ages.
This is a presentation of Dream Realm Enterprises, where dreams are our reality.
Welcome back to Q Who. This is episode 211, and I am your host, John Russell. Today, I will start my look at season one of Doctor Who. I have been doing a watch through of the series on DVD from the beginning. Starting, obviously, with season one, William Hartnell's very first season. Started with An Unearthly Child and worked my way up through that whole season. I've actually watched through the whole of the Hartnell era by this recording. So, slowly, gradually, I will be going through what I thought this time around of these stories. I periodically do run through the 60s Doctor Who era because that's my favorite era of the show. And so I've done a couple of watch-throughs of the 60s era in the last few years. In 2020, during the lockdown, when we could do very little but sit at home, I watched through them then. And I have recently started again because I thought, you know, why don't I kind of take notes as I go? And then for Q Who, I'll actually talk about my feelings of each of these stories and each of these seasons. So today we will begin looking at season one, and I've already recorded it. but it ran a bit long, so I'm going to do this in two parts. So this is actually a new intro because I wanted to set it up, and then I'll do an outro, and that way we will have a nice break in the middle so that this episode isn't, you know, an hour long. I don't like hour-long podcasts. I don't like listening to hour-long podcasts. I think about a half an hour is good up to that point. Anything from 30 minutes and below, I think, is good. And I think that's probably good for most of the audience. You may disagree. If you do, let me know. But anyway, here we are with part one of my watch-through of season one, as well as my listen-through of the Doctor Who audiobooks on CD. So where possible, I listen to the audiobook as well after watching it. I listen to the audiobook to review that as well. So where possible, it's there. An Unearthly Child, they have not released an audiobook of it yet. Terrence Dix novelized it way back in the 80s. My understanding is they actually did record an audiobook for An Unearthly Child, but it was a new, it was a whole new novelization by Nigel Robinson, I believe they said. But for some reason or other, due to rights issues, that's never been able to come out. It's still strangely on the docket for release sometime, so which apparently was read by William Russell. But whether or not that version ever comes out, I don't know. If they can't secure the rights to release that, I don't see why they don't just have William Russell to read the Terrence Dix version and put that out. It would be adequate, you know. But at any rate, I digress, and we will get on with part one of my watch-through/listen-through of Doctor Who Season 1. Here we go. Okay, and now I'm going to be talking about season one of Doctor Who, the very first season ever. Back in 1963, we started with An Unearthly Child. I will give you two different takes on this because they did a pilot, And we now have that, of course, and we can see that. I watched both the original pilot and the finished, the second version of An Earthly Child. And I used to, when they first brought the pilot out in the 90s on VHS, I kind of preferred the original pilot, and I didn't understand the changes that they made at the time. But now, 25 years later, seeing it again, I can kind of see why they didn't like the first run and decided to redo it. And, it, you know, that was a unique thing, especially in 1960s television, to do a pilot and then for the powers that be to say, no, redo it. Here's some notes, redo it. So, yeah, that just didn't happen in those days, and it rarely happens these days. It's a little more common now than it certainly was then, but that was quite a precedent. But they went back and they tweaked the script and took out a lot of the, you know, the Doctor and Susan are alien elements, and the time period they came from and so forth. They just kind of made all that a little more vague for the version that everybody eventually saw. And yeah, they just tweaked it. And yeah, I do think it came out better the second time now that I've seen it more recently. And yeah, I think it holds up really well too. I think it's a nice piece of drama. It really introduces the characters well, it introduces the concept well. And so yeah, that first episode is quite unique in itself, and it was a great way to start the whole series. It's a great jumping on point if you want to watch them from the beginning. So it works very well. And then of course you've got the three episodes of the Cavemen, the Tribe of Gum, as it's been coined. Those three episodes, it's all sort of, you know, it's all known as An Unearthly Child as a whole, the whole story. But it is kind of two stories. You know, it's kind of the pilot where they, you know, Ian and Barbara come on board and they barge their way in and then they take off and blah, blah, blah. And then they end up in caveman time. So it's sort of two different stories, but in one. The caveman bit, the Tribe of Gum, if you will, it's kind of hard to take. There are good things in it. There are really good performances. The cast is fine with what they, you know, with what they had to work with. Boris Hussein directed the heck out of it. And I think he got, you know, more out of it than a lot of directors would have. A lot of directors would have really chewed on that. They'd have had a field day, and it could have been really goofy. And they performed it seriously, and it came across as, you know, there's some really nice drama in there, and there's really nice moments, like the Doctor picking up a rock, and you kind of question, is he going to bash the caveman's head in? And he tells Ian he just wanted the caveman to draw a map back to the TARDIS or whatever. That's always been a point of contention for fans. And on one side of it, you think he was going to kill the caveman, and on the other side of it, maybe not. I've never been on board with that. Oh, he was going to bash his head in. I'm not sure what he was up to, and I'm not going to make any inferences on that. I'm not going to make any guesses of what the Doctor's motives were there. I don't think the Doctor is a murderer. I don't think he would have committed to that, even if he had that idea for a moment. I just take it as face value that what he told Ian was true. He was going to try and get him to draw a map in the sand. So, yeah. So for that, it's certainly a bit of interesting drama. It's a bit of back and forth with that whole three part. It really didn't need to be three parts with the cavemen. They could have done that in two and then gotten on with the Daleks, but that's not how it worked out. So overall, it stands up, though. Overall, it stands up. With An Earthly Child and The Tribe of Gum together as one story, I have to give it 3 TARDISes out of 5 because I think it stands up as a fine piece of drama and a fine jumping-on point. It was a really good beginning, especially with that first pilot. It was really, really nice. The original pilot, I'll give 2.5 TARDISes, but the story as a whole with the second pilot, I give 3 TARDISes out of 5. The Daleks, the 7-part story that introduced the Daleks, is a true classic. Some people think it's a bit too long, and the first time I saw it, I thought it was long and boring. This was back in the 80s. I was maybe 15 or 16 when I first saw it, and I just was more bored than anything. I was interested, I was fascinated to see the first Dalek story, but I have to admit I was pretty bored at the time with it. But over the years, I've come to appreciate it more and more, and every time I see it, I appreciate it more because I see more that I didn't see before. And really, I think it paces up pretty well now as a middle-aged man looking at it. I think it holds up as a really nice piece of drama and a really nice introduction to the Daleks. And I think it holds up and it paces well for its 7 episodes. It doesn't necessarily, these days at least, it doesn't feel like 7 episodes because it moves along at a nice pace. Especially if I don't tend to watch all in one go. I don't sit down and watch 7 complete episodes. Now and again, I'll get in that mood and I will. But I usually watch like an episode a day, which is how I went through these. I watched an episode a day over the course of a week or so. And I really enjoyed it. I really, really enjoyed it. I just felt like it was paced up better than I ever remember it being. It holds up better than I ever remember it being. And I have a lot more respect for the story now, certainly, than I did when I was a teenager. So, yeah, it's the Daleks, the Dead Planet, whatever you want to call it. It's officially the Daleks by the BBC. And that's what I refer to it as. And it's a terrific story. I give it 4 TARDISes out of 5. And as for the audiobook, which is a very different take, the meat and the guts of it are there on the bone, but it's a little bit condensed for the novelization. David Whittaker wrote that one, I believe, and it was also the first ever novelization of a televised story. So he kind of changed the beginning, of course, so that it was an introductory story. So some of the stuff that you got in An Earthly Child, he kind of rewrote and put it at the beginning of this one. So it's a different beginning, similar but quite different. With the audiobook, it's got William Russell reading it, so that's pretty cool. And it's from his perspective, from Ian Chesterton's perspective. And so it's interesting to see from his point of view, him meeting the Doctor. David Whittaker wrote it as if he was also first meeting Barbara, that they hadn't really worked together for that long. And so it's kind of like all these people are coming together for the first time and then getting whisked away through time and space and off to the Daleks, off to Skaro to meet the Daleks. So it's a very interesting take with the book. I really enjoy that. I remember reading that back when I was a teenager as well and just being, why did they do it this way? It kind of irked me way back when I read the original, the Target novelization in the 80s, and I didn't care for it. But upon listening to it now, with that middle-aged perspective, I guess, I think it holds up really well, and it is every bit as good as the TV serial. And I guess I'm not going to say better in some points, but it's an interesting alternate take. It's kind of like watching it from an alternate universe. It's a very different take on the meeting of these characters and this being their first adventure and nothing to do with cavemen. So I also give it 4 TARDISes out of 5. I think it was a really nice read, if you will, even though it was William Russell reading it to me, basically, or listening to the audio CD. But I really found that enjoyable. So that was cool. That was cool. And then we come to The Edge of Destruction. And this was their two-parter that they had to throw together because a story, I think it was the Masters of Luxor that fell through the wayside for whatever reason, and they didn't produce it, so they had to come up with something else. Marco Polo wasn't ready, so they had to fill the gap for a couple of weeks. And so I think it was David Whittaker again came up with The Edge of Destruction, or Inside the Spaceship, as some people call it. That's not what it's officially called by the BBC, so that's not how I refer to it. To me, it's always been The Edge of Destruction, and that's the name of the novelization. The Edge of Destruction is an interesting piece of drama as well. It's very much a character piece. It's a bit of a psychological drama. The TARDIS crew don't know what's going on, and there's a lot of misunderstanding. And it just seems like the TARDIS maybe is playing with their head a bit with everything that's going on. So of course they end up accusing each other of crazy things and all this and conspiracies, and it's an interesting view. It really is. And it used to always be kind of painful because I hated to see the TARDIS crew at odds, but now to look at it, it's a very interesting piece of drama. And I enjoyed it from that perspective. I enjoyed it more now than I did years ago. Once again, that teenage me in the 80s that saw it for the first time was just like, this is a mess. But it really hangs together. It's a really interesting piece of drama. And it's only 2 episodes. So, it's interesting to see them go from one part to another. And it's kind of essential for the development of the relationship of the TARDIS crew. And I think even though for an episode and a half or so, they're very much further apart than ever, at odds with each other, by the end, I think they sort of come to an understanding and just see that they all have weaknesses. They all have, their own foibles, mental foibles and personality foibles, if you will, for lack of a better word. So, I think it's quite an interesting character study. For the TV serial, I'll give it 3 TARDISes out of 5. The audiobook now, that I was pleasantly surprised with. I hadn't read this years ago, so to hear it for the first time, it was really, really cool. Because they added a lot more to it. I can't remember who wrote the novelization, and I didn't make a note of it, so I don't have that information offhand with me. But whoever they did a fantastic job with the novelization, and they took something that was a brilliant piece of television and made it an even more interesting book, in my opinion. I really enjoyed going more in depth with these characters, going more in depth with what was going on at the time. And we actually get kind of an exploration of the TARDIS in that as well. So it's all kind of fleshed out. It's a story that's really fleshed out for the audiobook. It's the audiobook. It's kind of twice as long as the story itself. So it would have been like a 3 or 4 part story if they'd have done it this way. So it's quite interesting, and a lot of it is sort of from Ian's perspective as well, and you get to see him, learn about the TARDIS and being curious about it, and, he kind of hangs with the Doctor a lot, and it's a really interesting fleshing out of the story, and I really enjoyed that. If you watch the two-part serial, and you're kind of like, I don't really know what's going on. Once you read the book, then you kind of get a better sense of what's going on, and I felt a little more connected to the story after hearing the audiobook. So I give that one 4 TARDISes out of 5. I think it's a really solid book. Now we move on to my favorite Doctor Who serial of all time. It has been since my teenage years, and it remains Marco Polo. I read this novelization when I was about 14 or 15. Whenever it came out, I can't remember the year that it came out, so the details are fuzzy. But I remember getting that, and on the weekends sometimes I would go and stay with my brother and his family, and I would sometimes take a book, or I'd take some VHS tapes and, you know, watch Doctor Who or read a book while I was there for the weekend. And in this case, I took Marco Polo, the novelization, which I'd picked up that week with me, and I read it. I read it all, I think, in like one night, and I loved it. I absolutely loved it. It was just... To me, it was just amazing. It was, you know, one I couldn't see, of course, because it was a lost episode, and we didn't have the Telesnap recreations at the time. So this was my only way to experience it. So the Target novels were really important to me at the time because of that situation. We just didn't have any other way of experiencing some of these stories, like this one, for instance. So, to get this novelization... Yeah, it was fascinating, first of all, to be reading a story that I couldn't see, but it was, you know, it was also, I think, my first historical, the first historical Doctor Who that I really came into contact with in any form. So that was fascinating. And then to read the story, and it's kind of a journey, you know. They're on this adventure and going from one place to another and going through all these adventures. I always identified with that always, those kind of stories always spoke to me and still do to this day. But really back then, I love those kind of stories where the characters are trying to get from point A to point B to point C and so forth. And it was a real journey, and the way that the book was written, it's kind of like a chronicling of their journey because of Marco Polo's entries in his diary, which they did on the television serial, of course. But in the book, it's almost like you're reading his diary in a way. And that always resonated with me, and I really loved that story. I mean, it just it really came alive for me, and I read it, like I said, in like a night, in one evening, and I stayed up late, I think, to finish it, and I loved it. I might not have read the last couple of chapters before going to bed. I think I the next afternoon I might have finished it, but then I remember the minute I finished it, I went right back to page one and I read it again, just immediately read it again. So over the course of that weekend, I read it twice. I read Marco Polo twice, and I just fell in love with that story, and that made me fall in love with Doctor Who even more, and that really solidified my love of the first Doctor more. Just based on reading that book, and then of course seeing at the time, for the first time, we were just starting to see his serials over here in America. They were finally playing on PBS. So I was slowly discovering the William Hartnell era, and he started to become my favorite Doctor, and to this day he still is. I just love his portrayal, and I loved his portrayal in the books, especially in Marco Polo. I really, really loved that story. And so reading that novelization made me fall in love with that story, and it's been my favorite ever since. And even now that we have a couple of versions of Telesnap Reconstruction, that they've done over the years, I love it even more. And it's, you know, that's kind of my holy grail. I just wish they'd find that story, or at least some of it. Or certainly, I wish they'd animate it, because I would really love to see it, you know, in some form or other. So, it's been a long time hoping that either that would be found and we could finally watch it, or, you know, they would animate it. So I was hoping that would be one of the early animations, and it never happened. So far it hasn't happened. Maybe someday. I think one of these days they will animate it, if they don't somehow find, if it doesn't turn up. It's one of those stories that should turn up, because it was sold, the first couple of seasons of Doctor Who were sold to more countries and so forth than any of the rest of it of the 60s. So technically Marco Polo should exist. And of course there's a long-standing rumor that the first two episodes do exist somewhere in the Middle East. I don't, you know, obviously we don't know if that rumor is anywhere near true, but it's interesting to talk about it and think about it, and hope that maybe if there is at least the first couple episodes, that, you know, they'll recover them and we'll get to at least see that. I would love to see any part of Marco Polo, but sadly we don't even have a clip. So any way I can experience it, I experience it. And that is a story I revisit at least once a year, watching the Telesnap reconstructions, and recently listening to the audiobook. Once again, I appreciated it. And they had Xenia Merton, I think that's her name, who played Ping Cho and who was in Space 1999. They had her reading it. It was one of the last things that she actually did professionally before she passed away. And I thought she did a wonderful reading of the novel. I enjoyed it once again. And so I really, really love Marco Polo. If you can't tell, I can't gush enough about Marco Polo. It's always been my favorite Doctor Who story, and it remains so to this day, 35 years after I first experienced it as a novelization from Target. So that's my favorite Target novelization, and it's my favorite Doctor Who story. So it's absolutely wonderful. And the TV serial based on the soundtrack with the Telesnaps, I give it 4.5 TARDISes out of 5. It is as close to perfect as you'll probably ever see a Doctor Who story, in my opinion. It's wonderful. It's absolutely wonderful. The pacing is perfect. The story is perfect. It's got a great villain. It's got great heroes. It's got great conflict within the TARDIS crew, and the Doctor at odds with Marco Polo, and it's just wonderful. I can't say enough about it. The audiobook I really loved. So that, with the novelization, the reading of it, it's wonderful. It's I give it 4.75, because it's even better than the Telesnap reconstruction. It's wonderful. So again, that's as perfect as of a book you're going to ever read. So if you've never read the Target novelization, read it, or grab the audio book. Xenia Merton is wonderful reading Marco Polo, and it's just a wonderful story. So that's all I can say. You know, I'm not going to say any more. I could go on for hours about that, because it is a wonderful story, my personal favorite. So there you go. 4.5 TARDISes for the Telesnap reconstruction. 4.75 for the audiobook reading by Xenia Merton. Wonderful stuff. All right. I hope you enjoyed the first half. I'm going to close it here. I think we've gone far enough. And we'll be back in the next episode of Q Who, number 212, for the second half of my look at season 1 of Doctor Who. Thank you for joining us, and we will catch you next time. You know the drill. Please stay tuned.
You have been listening to a fan production for Dream Realm Enterprises. This is a not-for-profit program.